Today, there may be good trouble ahead. It's a big and beautiful broadsheet format title, telling tales of protest and dissent in a time of political tumult and uncertainty. Founded by former Dazed and Confused editor Roderick Stanley, it's a thing of beauty, despite some tough topics in its crosshairs. Also on the show, as the summer is waving goodbye for us in the Northern Hemisphere at least, we give you an in-depth preview of what's happening in the print world this autumn. That's what we're serving up today on The Stack. From Midori House in London, this is The Stack, 30 minutes of print industry analysis with me, Tom Edwards. Coming up on the programme today, a major preview of what's still to happen this year in the world of magazines and newspapers. And yes, there are plenty of events and new titles on the way, you name it. But before that, it's time to talk about a title advocating for good trouble. This annual journal, only recently metamorphosed from its digital domain into newsprint, has a large format. Think of the broadsheets of yesteryear. And the title discusses something that couldn't be any more relevant to the here and now of 2018. Protest. And its editor-in-chief, Roderick Stanley, joins us now. Roderick Stanley, great to have you with us. Thanks for being on our programme. Tell us a bit about where this title comes from. I guess it's a real interesting moment, isn't it, for protest. It's an interesting time about people who are disruptive. Tell us the origin story, I suppose.
As ever, the name came a bit later. I think a good name, sometimes you just have to kind of sit back and be patient. And I didn't want to kind of lose time waiting for that. So, I mean, this was really kicked into action by the election of Trump. I'm based in New York. I'm British, as you can probably tell. But it was a pretty shocking sequence of events. And I'd had this desire to do something for a while based around, you know, what Good Trouble is about, which is really this intersection of arts and culture with politics and activism and protest. You know, it's long been an area that I've been passionate about and interested in, you know, when I've been working at other magazines, when I was like Dazed and Confused or elsewhere. And I hadn't been working in publishing for a good 6 years now. And this whole sequence of events came to pass. And I was like, you know what, this is the time. And I just kind of felt compelled to do something about it. And I think a lot of people's sort of reactions to the US election, to Brexit, and you know, other things happening across Europe and around the world was this desire to do something. And I guess this was my reaction. And, you know, I started a blog, just a Medium page. And like I mentioned, you know, I didn't have a name at that point. Just the thing I was really keen to do was just to put something together where I could start telling some stories in this area, gathering stories from previous colleagues and people I worked with and just collecting them in a digital space and just seeing where it was going. And then from there, I think it became a kind of fully fledged website a couple of months later. And then Good Trouble. There's a congressman and civil rights hero here in America. He's one of the congressmen for Georgia, John Lewis. And very famously was one of the civil rights activists who walked over, you know, Selma Bridge. And he is, you know, still obviously very, very active politically and is constantly speaking out. And one of the phrases he uses about protest and action is good trouble. I haven't got it in front of me, but there's a sample quote that I really like, which is something like, you know, when you see there's something that's not right or not fair or not just, you have a mission, a requirement to stand up and speak out and go out and get into good trouble, necessary trouble. And I was just reading it one day and I just loved that phrase, good trouble, and it kind of slotted into place.
And the rest, as they say, is history. I find it really interesting, Roderick, when we have, well, two things. One, the fact that this then manifests itself in a huge, giant newspaper format.
Yeah.
And secondly, also, when projects that are kind of digital in character initially go print. And there's something pleasingly reminiscent of many of the great breakout moments for dissent, for propaganda. You're thinking of kind of hand-printed pamphlets, the idea of the political document. Did you feel that newsprint, it's relevant and it delivers this sort of message in a way that even a very clever digital mechanism maybe can't?
There is something great and powerful about print, and I think, and newsprint particularly. The original idea was it was going to be a digital-only collaborative blog, web space, platform, call it what you want. through a series of events, we ended up accidentally launching a magazine, which I guess is the best way to do it. But I mean, I got involved through the digital side, had been running for a few months and starting to pick up steam. And I got asked to be involved with an event here in New York, you know, helping put together a panel of speakers and artists and activists. So I got involved in that. And then I foolishly promised that I would produce a zine for everyone to take home as a kind of, as a sort of takeaway from the event. And I was literally just going to take some of the stories from the website, cut and paste them together, like super old school, and staple them together via a photocopier and just leave them on people's seats as a kind of takeaway. But I hadn't really thought about it that much. And when it actually came to the time to do it, I was like, oh God, like, how am I going to do this? My good friend, Richard Turley, the art director, who is also British and based in New York, and we've known each other for a few years here and got on well. And we were talking about it, and he was like, oh, don't do that. You know, let's work together on something and blow it out into something a bit more. And through discussions, you know, I found this newspaper printer here in Queens, New York. And, you know, they do a lot of kind of art book press, which is kind of how I found them. And they do very small runs as well, which was also useful. And then, you know, Richard was like, well, look, how big can they print? And we found out that they can go as big as broadsheet newspaper. And we were like, okay, let's go for it. Let's make a broadsheet. No one does that anymore. There's obviously been the trend in actual newspaper publishing has to get smaller and smaller. Both of us kind of like to go against the grain a little bit. And we were like, well, you know, how big can we go? But, you know, you also mentioned the kind of connections to political communications. And, you know, there's obviously an influence there from the underground press of the sort of 60s and 70s and, you know, street postering and propaganda and leafleting. And all of that is obviously kind of informing the look and feel of it. But, you know, this is an annual newspaper at the moment. It comes out once a year, and obviously all of the stories are meant to be, hopefully, as relevant in 12 months' time as they are when it comes out. The content's on a very different time scale. So just being able to subvert that platform a little bit was also appealing.
Well, yeah, and it's interesting because the hand of Richard Turley is clearly visible, and yet it also looks different still than anything that he's done before, which I guess is a great compliment to his innovation and to the fruitfulness of your collaboration on this project. Tell me a bit about other aspects in terms of the composition, because you've got this Unmanifesto insert, which is kind of just daring people to unkeep the pages and frame them on their walls, I guess. Is that the idea that, again, you'd have people almost, you could imagine people sort of postering that out on, I don't know, on hoardings around the city? It feels like a call to be very different with how you engage with paper almost.
Yeah, I think so. And it's a bit of a happy accident how that came together. And there were some print limitations, and then they, you know, we had to split it into two sections. And then we were like, oh, you know, this is an opportunity. What are we going to do with this second section? We had this kind of art dossier already. And we were like, you know, this will be great. We can just actually just go full size and just smash these across an entire spread. Mm. And they become pull-out posters, which wasn't originally the intention. But in the process of putting these pages together, because I think we've expanded from the first issue was just 12 pages. This is now 32. So there's a lot more in it. So it presented, a lot of different challenges and opportunities along the way. And we did end up with this great, you know, entire section. It's like an extra magazine within a magazine. And it's like a gallery space. I like the fact that, as you mentioned, you know, you can't actually see the artworks until you pull the magazine apart. You have to physically deconstruct the magazine to kind of fully experience it. Beyond that, what people want to do with them, it's up to them. I mean, I fully encourage people to take these and put them on their wall or to poster them up wherever they feel might be appropriate. Equally, it's something that can, like I mentioned, can be kept. And I think it's a bit of a time capsule of a time and a place and an attitude and, you know, what we were thinking and how we were expressing ourselves at this time.
Well, Roderick, to that point then, I wonder, even in the act of putting this together, getting it out there, seeing how people engage with it, has that changed your sense of, I don't know, where on the spectrum of pessimism to optimism you might be? Because you mentioned that it was sort of impossible to divorce this from the political goings on, both here in Westminster, but of course, yeah, on your side of the pond with Donald Trump and all the rest of it. Has doing this, the people you've worked with, I mean, there's a fabulous profile of Harry Leslie Smith. There's a piece about, let me get my names right, Hank Willis Thomas, that you just read them and you look at the work and you look at them presented in this style. And you, it, I don't know, made me feel better. Have you felt that as well?
Yes, I think every morning, most of us, we look at the headlines and Twitter or whatever, and we take this sort of full frontal assault to our senses and, you know, our sense of what's going on in the world around us. And it's really hard. It's very easy to get kind of sucked into a wormhole of despair. So I think it is important, and, you know, not just Good Trouble. I mean, you know, obviously we're trying to do our own little small thing. But I think for all of us who feels like they, you know, want to engage and make things for the better, to try and look around us for examples of people who are doing great work and deserve to have the spotlight shone on them, to try and make those connections, to jump off from that. You know, one of the fun things about this, and there's a few thousand copies of this, this is not going to bring the establishment to its knees. Like, self-published magazines are not of themselves going to change these huge political developments that you mentioned. But I do think small can be powerful in its way, that when we're talking about individuals and we as individuals are choosing to tell their stories. And sometimes in the process of making this magazine, you know, we've developed friendships, partnerships with many of the people that we featured. And you mentioned a couple in the previous issue. There's people like Matthew Smith, who's been photographing the connection between the protest and the rave scene in Britain since the late 80s and all the way through the early 90s and the underground party scene. And he was really into being featured in Good Trouble. And we've had a lot of conversations since about, he's working on a huge retrospective of his photographs and all the rest of it, and we're talking about how we can help out. So there's a lot of kind of behind-the-scenes connections, not just between us and the people, but even people that we have featured who have started talking to each other. I think part of the important thing is telling those stories, taking the time out to celebrate wins, to look at creativity, the energy of people who are doing amazing work. And as you say, I think it does change the way you feel when you realize there is so much energy and optimism and hard work being done by so many people pushing in the right direction.
Excellent. Well, more power to you. It's a fantastic print product, which we like to celebrate, but few, I don't know, have that sort of, I don't know, that kind of potency about them. There's something really pleasing that can still happen, a bit of edge. It was just fantastic to read, and very popular, I must say, here, particularly with our creatives who admired yours and Richard's handiwork a great deal. So, yeah, great. looking forward to the next one already. Next up on the show, a great pleasure to welcome the show's producer, Fernando Augusto Pacheco, to Studio One to give us a bit of a, Faye, an autumn preview. The leaves are turning brown, temperature cooling a little, but there's plenty to warm the cockles as we head into the autumn season.
Absolutely, Tom. And I have to say, I'm very, very sad the summer is finishing, but if you are interested in magazines in the publishing industry, that's the most exciting times. I think we should start about the new titles that are coming up, you know, from September onwards. First of all, Interview is back.
Now, this is funny because listeners to the show will remember that it wasn't that long ago we were lamenting its loss. That's a quick turnaround, even though we've seen a few sort of heritage titles being rekindled. But this is hardly, we've hardly got used to it being away and it's back.
It's interesting because apparently the magazine had a difficult kind of financial story. And Peter Brandt, you know, the owner, apparently he repurchased the title. And, you know, I hear rumors that apparently, you know, it's going to be quite an interesting project, you know, a new look. Of course, we don't have much information about it, but I like the fact that, you know, some titles will never die in some ways.
It's interesting because the value of the name just endures, and it seems that people sort of realize that quicker in some cases than others. Though in this case, we remember, I think when we talked about it, we documented this, you know, blood on the boardroom carpet, lots of wrangles, all sorts of quite murky questions. But I guess if the outcome is that we get Interview back, it's long been innovative, exciting, interesting. It can only be a good thing.
And we might have to welcome back James Hyman to give his opinion on the new design. Of course, he was the one who was in our special show about Interview magazine. But Tom, we also have some good news. You know, CR Fashion Book, it's a biannual fashion title from Karine Reutfeldt, former Vogue Paris. This time, they're doing a very interesting launch. It's their first international edition in Japan. So there will be some of the same articles from the international, from the normal edition, but they have a new editorial, you know, new fashion shoots specifically for the Japanese market. Mm. There'll be a circulation of 25,000. I very much look forward. It's going to be launched in October as well. It's a partnership between Karin Heutfeld and the Japanese arm of Hearst magazine as well. So I think it's a very cool launch as well.
Absolutely. And it's funny. I'd say the sort of Japanese fashion titles are still, I don't know, they're still kind of right up there. I always think whenever Tyler returns from his travels, he always has a stack of amazing new editions, either new titles or old favourites that just still look the part, fantastic editorial, superb photography, and of course, real design, Elan, which we know and love.
And good paper as well. Do you remember Anna Deloruzzo? She works for Vogue Japan. She says, you know, it's one of the best Vogues because the quality of the paper is the best one.
Again, who knew that if you source the best paper, you get the best product?
Exactly.
Who would ever have figured that out? Anything else you're looking forward to in particular, Faye?
Well, let's talk a little bit about events, right, Tom? I think, you know, if you're interested in the magazine world, you would be busy. The first one is, of course, the Whitechapel Art Book Fair, which we'll be attending next Thursday. And listeners, there will be some stories here on the Stack next week. It'll be an interesting one. A lot of publishers, but not this time, not only books, but also magazines. Mm. So I think they're understanding the importance of how, you know, of the indie titles. And I say indie titles, I think they'll be quite... you know, some more traditional established titles in the art book fair as well. I've attended, I believe, 2 to 3 years ago. It's marvelous. I mean, if you're interested in new publishers, new books, new authors, you must go. But you should listen to the Stack and we'll give you a nice walk through the event.
Indeed, we'll be heading there later in the week. And it was funny, we were talking to our former culture editor, one of Monocle's top senior editors, Robert Bound, earlier about this. And he said it's a really interesting role that art books in particular play at opening up what can sometimes seem a slightly kind of nebulous and hard to grasp market. You know, if you look at the art market globally, it's maybe a little off-putting for certain consumers, maybe if you're not a buyer, if not a collector, a gallerist. And I think the sort of art books market plays a really interesting role in opening that up, sort of democratizing the space, communicating the messages as well, which is also very interesting.
Absolutely. And Tom, moving on a little bit more to the business of publishing and circulation and everything, it's DistroPress time. And this time it will be in Rome. And I've attended once in Brussels. It is a very interesting event if you want to know, you know, how you make money with your magazine, with your newspapers, you know, and of course, one of the main themes is circulation and distribution, which is something that we discuss here on the Stack all the time. And, you know, of course, all the major publishers are there from all around the world, not only Europe, but from Asia, from South America, from North America as well. And of course, we'll be there as well.
Another Monocle delegation will be attending. And as you say, sort of unpacking distribution, which is so often something that trips up. This is what editors and publishers actually always tell us on this program. You know, in a sense, the easier part can be making your magazine. You know, you can find great writers, you can get great suppliers of paper, but actually getting that product in front of eyes and onto newsstands is often where the wheels can come off. So secrets will be revealed. And, you know, Mod Mag itself, with our good friend Jeremy Leslie, who will also be cropping up with a little section that he's curating, I think, at the London Art Book Fair. That's coming up in the not-too-distant future.
1st of November, and there'll be interesting titles there, National Geographic. And one I think you like, Tom, I think the editor of Mondial magazine will be there as well. One of the best football titles, perhaps.
Very, very good.
Yeah, so, very good. Lots of good stuff this autumn.
An epic selection. Faye, thanks for illuminating us. We have been previewing what's ahead this year, and we're going to be hearing about another very exciting magazine conference, which is on the cards, right after this. Fernando Augusto Pacheco, the show's producer, still with me, mentioning some things to look forward to in the fall season. Go a little transatlantic there. But some stuff that's happening sooner. We mentioned the London Art Book Fair. Also, IndieCon, of course, Faye. Remind us a bit about this and tell us who you've been speaking to.
Well, around the same time of the Art Book Fair will be IndieCon, which will be in Hamburg this year. And Urs Spindler is one of the founders of it. So it's kind of an independent magazine conference as well. And it's their fifth edition as well. I remember when we were covering them right at the beginning. And they also published a beautiful magazine about the city of Hamburg, which is Gentle Rain, and the new edition will be premiering there as well at the conference. There'll be a lot of workshops and everything, but I spoke to Urs Spindler and he gave me a little preview.
It's a week to go, and our office always turns into something between a post office and a scrapyard. That's the point when you realize IndieCon is about to start, because there's so many magazines arriving here right now. There's so much stuff like building materials and everything filling our offices. And next week the people are going to start coming. We have the summer school at the beginning of the week, starting on Monday, which is 40 young journalists and photographers and designers who will do a printed magazine, but also a magazine in augmented reality, which I'm really excited about. We had then, of course, the conference and the IndieMake days, like the public part. So a lot of stuff going to happen, and I'm really excited.
I can totally imagine. And, you know, when you told me you're surrounded by new magazines coming up, that sounds like paradise to me. For those listeners, I'm sure a lot of our listeners know IndieCon, but for those who don't know, when was the first one you guys did it, and how do you think it's evolving throughout time?
Well, we actually started 5 years ago. To be honest, it's making the conference always feels a bit like making a magazine in itself. You think about a topic, you speak to some experts, you work on content, and you try to make everything like a worthwhile experience. And that hasn't changed a lot. But even in the 5 years that we are doing this now, the media landscape around us has changed a lot. From the publications we had at IndieCon in the first year, I think almost half of them don't exist anymore, which is, of course, a cycle for independent magazines, maybe. On the other hand, we see so much interesting stuff popping up online, for example, in the form of podcasts or in the form of newsletters or in the form of VR experiences. And there's also quite many magazine makers who are interested in this kind of thing and who are kind of trying out things in this new media. And that's also something we wanted to pick up at this year. And so that's why we themed the conference No More Borders Between Disciplines, No More Borders Between Media. I don't want to over-exaggerate this. I think there are still some borders, and we're definitely going to talk about them, about professionalism, about what it takes to make a great publication, also to make a great printed publication. But we just wanted to open the minds this year to something new.
And I would like to talk about the list of speakers. You know, I had a quick look, and you're talking about magazines that perhaps don't exist anymore. But it's very nice to see there are actually new titles as well. For example, there's this beautiful title about dance as well, right?
Gemma is going to be at IndieCon. I think we can say that IndieCon had a little bit of a part in it coming into existence, actually.
Oh, nice.
Because the creative director, Ibrahim Nehme, who you obviously know, also did The Outpost, which is still one of my favorite magazines of all times. He met two designers in Hamburg, and he started this magazine idea of a magazine that kind of brings the medium of dance to the printed page, together with Jenna Al-Obedine, a dance researcher from Beirut. And they then kind of teamed up with the design team from Hamburg and did it together. It makes me very happy to see that this kind of collaboration becomes real kind of after doing this a couple of years.
Give us a sneak peek of other people that will be attending IndieCon in terms of speakers or anyone interesting.
All the people who are going to speak at IndieCon are really great, and they are doing fabulous work. I myself, I've been a fan of MacGuffin from issue one, and I'm really looking forward to meet Ernst van der Hoven, who's one of the founders and who's going to talk about it and hopefully also brings a new issue with him. I already spoke about the topic, like No More Borders. It works. If you look at MacGuffin, it's a magazine. They're not just filling the pages. They're kind of like doing a research project. And then out of this research project, there can grow a magazine, but they can also grow an exhibition out of it, or they can grow a podcast out of it. And I think that's a very, very interesting approach, and an approach that challenges our own editorial routines in some ways. And that's, I'm really excited to hear about that. Also, maybe in the gallery of personal heroes, Oliver Gers will be at IndieCon again, the editor-in-chief of Dummy magazine. He's actually been the keynote speaker at the first IndieCon. I'm really excited how he will look back at the past 5 years. Dummy is actually still around, but he also kind of let us know that he'll bring some new publishing ideas with him and going to introduce them at IndieCon. I'm also really looking forward to that. What IndieCon is also a little bit about is always to open the mind, because in our daily routine, we're often stuck in the looking at a couple of blogs, looking at a couple of Instagram pages, but there's so much more going on. We're really lucky that we have some IndieCon ambassadors by now, like Nelson Hng in Shanghai. He introduces us every year to new publishers, and this year there's a collective called ArtCupy. One of theirs is Iris Lee. She's going to visit Hamburg, and they are, you probably have to Google them because the images are just so impressive. They are building libraries. They are building libraries and bookshops in abandoned buildings. They are also publishing about this experience and are publishing about urban development, about architecture, design. It's just something I never saw that before. And you will only find a couple of websites in Chinese language. It's just, just a beautiful thing that there's so much stuff going on out there that's great and that you can discover.
Well, that sounds all very interesting. But also, I need to ask you, because I know you created this wonderful title, Gentle Rain. And when is the new issue coming out? Will perhaps we have a special preview at IndieCon itself?
Yeah, actually, we kind of decided not to do two big events in the year. So we just kind of merged the release of the new Gentle Rain issue into IndieCon. So there's going to be a pre-release at IndieCon. It will be the first time you will be able to actually hold the new issue of Gentle Rain in your hands. It's going to be at the bookstores and the magazine stores a week later, starting at the 14th. I'm just really happy that we're still doing it, actually. As I said, there's a couple of independent magazines that ceased to exist in the past couple of years. I don't know if you recently read Ryan Fitzgibbon, who's also been at IndieCon twice and who I consider just a great person, stopped Hello Mister after 10 issues now, which was really sad for us. So we're basically just happy that Gentle Rain is still working, that we find partners in the business community, that we also find enough readers to keep this project going. Yeah, it's going to bring you many exciting stories from Hamburg that are probably or likely also interesting for people in all the other big cities on the world.
Spindler there, talking to Fernando a little earlier, and Gentle Rain really was that garnered so much attention, I remember, when it first appeared. Looking forward to seeing the latest iteration.
I'm curious to see the cover. They always have brilliant covers.
Indeed, so much to look forward to in Hamburg and around the world. And of course, you can hear every week all the big latest stories from the world of print right here on The Stack. Thanks, Fernando, for being with us, as always. If you want to get in touch with myself or with Faye, maybe it's a suggestion, maybe a newspaper or a magazine that you really think we should cast our eyes on, drop a note to Fernando. You'll find him at fp@monocle.com. We'll be back at the same time next week. We'll be at the London Art Book Fair, amongst other places. But now, to end the show, as we started by saying, summer almost over. So we think we need to spice things up with a little heat, a hot song, if you will. This is Karim with Il Fait Chaud. This is The Stack. I'm Tom Edwards, thanks for listening. Je descends sur la plage, le soleil tape sur mon dos. La mer est calme et bien sage, le sable brûle ma peau. J'enlève mon chapeau de paille, lunettes de soleil sur le nez.